situation. There was a vast amount of religious dissatisfaction, as I say, in the syllabus. Why? Because there was no strong monarch to defend the people. Now listen to me. The kings of Spain, they simply controlled it. The church, Rome could not get money from, began, that is, the money supply from Spain, which is the most wealthy country, and France and England, began to dwindle down, and therefore, the Pope, the church in Rome, went, the only place they could go to get money, where there was no strong central monarchy to stop them, and that was the Holy Roman Empire. What I'm saying is this, that as France, England, and Spain choked off the flow of money, the church began to increasingly loot, rob from, steal from the people of the Holy Roman Empire. Germany. They just kept them. And we're going to see, and this is a big thing with Martin Luther. One of the things, Martin Luther talked about theology. But one of the things that's often missed because of the theological importance, because the Protestant Reformation was primarily a theological event, what is often overlooked is the fact that Luther talked continually about the right, the way the church was keeping the people in abject poverty, simply looting them. You understand that? Because nobody could stop them. That is, in general, There was significant religious aspiration, though. People were ignorant, but there was religious hunger based upon a fear and longing for assurance of salvation. Roman Catholic Church, you had to pay a lot of money to stay out of hell. And people longed for salvation, assurance of salvation. We're going to see this in Martin Luther himself. Great attention was given to what the church offered as assurance of salvation, indulgences, relics, pilgrimages. We studied this last quarter. In 1509, Frederick the Wise, who was Luther's prince, boasted that in the church, they were calculated to reduce time in purgatory by 1443. That is, if you paid homage to each, every relic in Saxony, you could save yourself 1443 years in purgatory. That doesn't sniff at it. You remember what purgatory is? Purgatory is where you go for forgiven sin. If you're not forgiven, you go to hell. His collection included, I'll list these for you, the one tooth of St. Jerome, four pieces of St. Chrysostom. By the way, there was enough pieces of some of these saints, parts of the bodies, to make up several men. There were six pieces of St. Bernard, who's a dog. Four pieces of St. Augustine. There's a lot of him to go around. You know, he had 572 ribs and eight legs. Fortunately for him, because four hairs of the Virgin Mary is a real trick getting those. Three pieces of the cloak of the Virgin Mary. See, by the way, some of these things came back from the Crusades, you recall. Crusaders sold everything. Seven pieces of Mary's veil sprinkled with the blood of Jesus when she took him down to the cross. One piece of Jesus' swaddling clothes. Pampers. There's enough wood. There's enough pieces of the crib of Jesus and the cross of Jesus to make the ark. One piece of gold brought by the wise man, three of myrrh, one strand of Jesus' beard, one nail driven into his hands, one fragment of bread from the Last Supper, slightly moldy, one piece of the stone upon which Jesus stood to ascend to heaven, and one twig of the Moses' burning bush. How they got that one, I'll never know. But it was slightly singed. By 1520, this was in 1509,
11 years later, 1520, then the collection had grown to 19,013 relics. There was really people really went for these things, especially in Germany. When we look at Italy, Italy was a mess. Italy was divided into a number of city-states. It was decentralized. I listed these. These were the Kingdom of Naples, the Duchy of Milan, the Republic of Venice, the Republic of Florence, Papal States of Rome. Pope was both a civil and religious ruler. And the Pope always wanted to expand his domains at the expense of others, and he resorted to the poison cup, dagger, war, anathema, intrigue. Things were bad in Spain and Italy. Martin Luther, wherever he said that, went to Italy, went to Rome. Thought he was going to heaven, found out he went to hell. Said, I came for roses and left them garlic. Garlic. Yeah. That's where you send them to hell. What was the religious situation in Italy? The people laughed at much of the corruption of the church and the attendant abuses. That is, the people in Italy, see, one of the things you had to do to go to heaven was make pilgrimages, you know, or one of them, that's not true. One of the good ways to reduce your time in purgatory, and everybody went to purgatory except the saints. A good way to reduce, and if you died on a crusade, you get out of purgatory. That was exceptional. But if you, one way to reduce your time in purgatory was to make a pilgrimage to Rome. And we in Florida understand that. That means money, tourist money. And they would come, they would pay, they had to pay to have masses said and pay. Leave money at the relics, and a lot of cash came in, and the people of Rome loved that. People definitely loved that, but they were very cynical. The people generally, why? Because of the Renaissance. Listen to me, Italy was more pagan. The people generally took pride in the Renaissance popes, and the Renaissance popes were not religious men, they were classical pagans. They believed in cultural progress, the artwork, which people will now go to. Even, listen to me, even now people will go to Italy to see some of the artwork and statuary that was there when Luther was alive. Much of it. Like Da Vinci's Last Supper. We're very proud of that. The beautiful architecture, it was beautiful. But they took a very cynical attitude toward religion. Why? Well, they'd been several centuries of rottenness, corruption. The populace liked the idea of other nations coming to Rome because they shared their wealth. We're going to see later where Martin Luther goes. He found, you know what he heard? He heard a priest speaking Latin, because the common people didn't speak Latin anymore. So when you hear this priest in Rome saying the words of the Mass, when you turn the wine into the blood of Jesus, and the bread and flesh of Jesus, transubstantiation. Rather than say that in Latin, he says, this is a joke from the people who were there, bread you are and bread you shall remain. Wine you are and wine you shall remain. And that was a big joke. That was the attitude. He had Luther's later to say, well, those people can. Well, I'm saying one mass, those guys can say 30. They were paid for each one they said. They could take it so they could ride them up like an auctioneer. Very cynical. You see the map? Of the Suleiman the Magnificent ruled from 1520 to 1566. He was one of the strongest rulers in Europe. Look at look at the extent of that empire. From the 8th to the 13th centuries, Islam was culturally, militarily, and politically superior to Western Europe. The people of Islam, through this Ottoman Empire here, they considered these people, our ancestors, to be a bunch of backwoods hillbillies, and they were right compared to the culture of these people. In 1521, Suleiman captured cities in Hungary and threatened to take Europe. One of the reasons, remember I said the king of the Holy Roman Empire, Philip of Spain, later on, not when Luther began, said to kill that monk while the trouble was causing. And remember I said that they Freddie didn't want to do it, come on and make him do it, it was a war, declare war against an army, go make him do it. Why didn't he do it? How did Frederick the Wise not be attacked? Because he defied the Pope and the King.
He threatened him.
Yes, the answer is that they couldn't start a war in Germany. Why? Because Germany was the Baptist, was holding off the Ottomans. They just divided Germany. So what happened was that by the time they couldn't fight the Protestants until they finished dealing with the Turks. And by the time they got around to fighting, got through dealing with the Turks, the Protestants was too strong for itself. 1521, Suleiman captured the citizen Hungary, in 1526, Turkish forces sacked Rome. Luther rejoiced in their victory. It was the home of the Antichrist, you see, by that. Vienna was besieged by the Ottomans. Luther called for Protestants to defend the city. Finally, they ended up taking Hungary, owning Hungary. Especially if you go to Budapest today, you see minarets. Very interesting. It's quite enigmatic. Somebody doesn't understand history. Go to, you know, all over Hungary. These same kind of buildings you see in Cairo. And Istanbul. Muslim minarets. Interesting. You've seen it before. You know, look like a water tower. Fancy water tower. All right. Anyway. Eventually, Suleiman became the ruler over Egypt, North Africa. Look at that. Asia Minor, right here. Palestine, you can see the purple on the map up here. The Balkans and Hungary. The Turkish Navy ruled the Mediterranean. So there's a great threat. And this, as I say, is something we helped across the Reformation. Well, this brings us to the Lutheran Reformation. You see the situation now. Decentralization plus extreme corruption. Strong, simple monarchy, same here. Well, we come into the Lutheran Reformation, and let's start with Laterets, and this is the only time I think in my syllabus I do this, where I put in the material for Laterets. But here's, and I think these are so important, though. Laterets, inclusive generalization. This is looking ahead. This is why it's parenthetical. As we begin to look at the Protestant Reformation. Number one, the Protestant and Catholic Reformations were two phases of one movement. Very important. Both sought to cleanse the church and to bring it to a closer approximation of the Christian ideal. Right, said last hour that the Roman Catholics never denied that the church needed to be reformed. Things were a mess. So these were two phases of the same movement. Secondly, they differed as to the fashion in which it was to be accomplished. The Catholic Reformation insisted that it be done within the existing framework and included no changes in doctrine. Very important. Protestants broke with the Church of Rome. They wanted doctrinal reform. The geographic line of demarcation between those who adhered respectively to the Protestant and Catholic Reformation in part coincided with the boundaries of the Roman Empire. In the main, those languages had been assimilated to Latin culture before the 16th century remained laws of the Church of Rome. Here's what I mean, but we said this last word. Rome, culture of Rome is generally called Latin culture. Why do we call Mexico and Central and South America the Latin American countries? Is it because of their culture, they were conquered by Latin culture. Now Rome Latinized Spain in the early in the classical period. They Latinized parts of France, southern France, and France to a lesser degree. They Latinized up to the Rhine and the Danube, right through here. They never Latinized England. They occupied England. They never got beyond the Rhine, Rome. They sent a legion beyond the Rhine one time to conquer those pagans, and nobody ever saw the legion again. There we go. So they drew a line for Rhine, so they
Jews and dividing of the empire. Got that?
Later on, mainly at the time of Christ, in the second century, the days of Hadrian, they occupied Britain, set up camps, they tried to occupy Scotland. They couldn't even occupy Scotland. So they built a great wall between England and Scotland. You heard of Hadrian's Wall right here? You still see it right there. They built a wall right there to keep the Scottish Aborigines, they were called Picts, P-I-C-T-S.
Small people that tattooed themselves and fought like crazy, like the American Indian.
So they never Latinized, as they never even much of Germany, they simply occupied, but they never by Latinized, they never acculturated, they never fixed their culture as they did in Spain. And they never, as I say, the Northern British Isles, Scotland, they couldn't even occupy. They built a wall to shut people out. Now, if you want to read it, in Rudyard Kipling's series, Puck of Pook's Hill, which are semi-children's stories, but here we are, they got a series.
Influence from the Roman occupation?
Yes, mainly the main cities. The Roman word for camp is castrum. We talked about this last week. Castrum is the Latin word for camp. You see this castrum in Westchester, Lancaster, Dorchester. Every city has castrums. Westchester, Worcester, Shursauce. These cities are originally Roman camps. But now, when I say, let me give you an example, I'm talking about different culture. You see there today, if you live in Florida, between the Latin culture, way of thinking, and what we might call the Anglo-Saxon culture, you see it, for instance, in the, you ever heard the term macho? For instance, a Latin man is part of the culture. A Latin man is a Christian who has to fight his culture in a matter of personal morals. Really. You almost all never see a Latin man without Cuba or that culture, the Latin culture. You all know what I'm talking about. Doesn't have a mustache. Well, that was a mustache in the sissies. Whereas, we don't think, with us, we don't make any difference, you understand? You have one, you don't have one. And, one of the real problems of Latin culture is that the idea that a man is supposed to be faithful to his wife is considered unrealistic. It isn't done. No matter who likes sex. In fact, the more women he can have sex with, the more of a man is. That's where this term macho came from. But Christians have problems. Now, the women in the traditional Latin culture, they don't expect it. Yeah, they don't expect the husband to be faithful. Thomas Vivian, Spain. This is a matter of culture. And, but you see other differences. For instance, there's more family pressure among the Cubans, for instance. Among the Cubans who came early, and Castro ran the better people out of Cuba, those people were no problem at all. Very little juvenile delinquent, very little crime. Why? You see, if one of them got in trouble, you said the boy broke a window at school or something, he would all of a sudden have a meeting with his dad and his uncles and his cousins. All the men and the clans would gather and they would deal with it. Very little crime. You understand what I'm saying? It's a cultural difference. It's just the way you think. That's what culture is.
favorite example, I teach this in anthropology, there is a culture. And cultures have trouble understanding each other. My favorite story is true. The Second World War, they were when the American Marines and the Army were fighting in the islands. And some of the generals, their lines, Japanese lines, were only 30 feet. Some thousand American lines, they were fighting all during the day and digging in where they were. It was terrible hand to hand fighting. And they dig in very close to each other. And night was a hell of a project. The crews sneaking up on me at night. And the Americans found out that they could get the Japanese at night to betray their position. They'd get them to shoot, and they'd know where they were. They'd aim with a mortar shell, and the gun flashes. And they'd yell, and they'd insult the emperor. Hirohito is an SOB or something like that, you know. And they're a sacred emperor, you know. Japan was a religious cult. So they would insult the emperor, you know, just people called their names. Then the Japanese just couldn't stand that. Best they just lose control of it, often shoot and get away their position.
Of that generalization, this geographic line, Fourth, the Protestant Reformation sprang chiefly from the lower social strata, the Catholic Reformation from the clergy, chiefly from the aristocracy. That is, the Protestant movement. And Protestantism, listen to me, while Protestantism had its strongest force among the lower classes, although its leader... Okay, now we come to Martin Luther. If you want to read the best biography of Martin Luther, Roland Bain's Here I Stand is the best. It's in our library. Luther was quite a character, and we need to know about him. We look at his life, first of all. He was born, look at his home life, born in 1483, which means 1517. You must know that date. 1517, when the Reformation began. He nailed the 95 theses to the church door, October 31st, 1517, Halloween night. He nailed the 95 theses to the church door in Wittenberg, or Wittenberg, as we said. He was 34 years old. His father was a peasant by class, but he became a man of some means. That is, he owned some mines, some small mines, and he became quite wealthy, and so he was sort of a peasant who rose. Luther's home was a very superstitious one, which means he was an average home. It was a very superstitious age. You know, one of the stories about Martin Luther is he threw an ink pot at the devil. Well, did he do that? No, probably not, but he could have. He might have. This thing of knocking on wood, not walking under ladders, and avoiding black cats, and a thousand things you never heard of, and I never heard of. It's a very superstitious age. And we're going to see Luther acts somewhat superstitious. Luther was known for his coarse language. Luther wanted to tell you off. You know, they say, if you want to tell somebody you love them, tell them in French. If you want to call your hogs, call them in German. The standard language was very coarse. Standard peasant language was coarse, given the colorful epithet. We would consider the average common language of the day, of Luther's day, we would consider to be coarse and even obscene. But Luther was a man of his, you must understand, Luther was a man of his day, not our day. Luther is often criticized for his language by modern people, because Luther was somewhat, especially his table talks, things are very coarse. We can say, how can a Christian or a believer talk like that? But it must be remembered that it was a coarse, mucky, smelly, vulgar age. Couldn't read or write, probably. Had head lice, bed bugs, fleas. Took a bath every 4 or 5 years. Took it one at all. Had the morals of a promiscuous rabbit. The average stuff. And was coarse, vulgar. That's kind of age it was. Very bad. Luther has been criticized for his drinking habits. Roman Catholic scholars like to jump on. Roman Catholic scholars, older Roman Catholic historians, not the newer ones, older Roman Catholic historians tried to slander Luther. He was, why did the Reformation begin? Because Luther wanted to get married. We're going to say that wasn't true. He was a drunken monk. He was coarse. The reason this is important, the older Roman Catholic historians, they try to picture Luther as being uncommonly coarse, crude, and lustful, and a drunkard. And he wasn't. He was about average for his day. Understand? He drank. I'm a teetotaler. I'm against drinking. But this idea of total absence, the idea that Christians don't drink anything, is a very recent idea. Whether it's right or wrong, I think it's a good idea. But historically, that is, I think teetotaling was the spiritual ideal of the New Testament. You recall that John the Baptist had neither wine nor strong drink. Timothy apparently was a teetotaler.
Paul had to write to him and say, take a little wine for your stomach's sake, for your altered infirmities. So non-drinking, and of course you understand the difference between fermented wine and mixed with water and highly distilled beverage, you know, beer and liquor. There's a big difference in that too. You know, just one thing to drink, wine.
Was not thought of, was not held through most of the history of the church. It still isn't in the Lutheran church. You go to it, still today, you find a Lutheran. He was proud of his ability to hold his beer. Germans always have been. He had a mug with, I put this in the solo bunch of my entertainment. He had a mug with three rings, which he called respect of the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, and the Lord's Prayer. And he would chug a lug it. And he remarked that he could, you know, chug a lug it and drink. His father wanted him to study law. Why? You see, in that society, the study of law was one of the very few ways a man of the lower classes, a peasant, could rise socially. There was not a lot of what Americans know as upward mobility. In America, you can move upward quite easily, in a number of ways. But in medieval Europe, one of the few ways the common man could move up socially was through the law. And his father wanted to study law. He studied at the University of Erfurt, got his BA degree at age 19, which was kind of pretty normal. His master's at 22. He was thus enabled to teach. Now keep in mind, in Europe, traditionally in European education, the master's degree in Europe means more than a master's degree does in America. But the doctorate degree in Europe means less. That is, it takes less effort for a doctorate degree in England, for instance. You go to University of Edinburgh and get a doctorate degree with much less work than you get one, say, at the university here. But it takes more work to get a master's. And I'm just trying to see if the master's degree then was much more, higher degree than it is today. His father intended him for him to study law. When Luther changed his mind, his father was heartbroken. But Luther was unable to teach. Luther was very intelligent. Now we find Luther in a monastery. How did he get in the monastery? Well, we'll see here. Luther had a profound need for the assurance of salvation, which a lot of people did. But Luther seems to have had a more intense need than the average. Now keep in mind that the way the church operated, the church spent most of its time in those days threatening people with hellfire in order to get money out of them for all kinds of things. Last rites, and anything had to do, confessions, penance, indulge, the whole thing, which you're supposed to know about. You understand that? And so people lived. Very dynamic, especially the church, you see the church say, look, you do these things, you pay this money, you take this pilgrimage, you say these prayers, you'll be okay.
And Luther was never quite sure. It's very important to know. He had a profound need for the assurance of salvation. And also keep in mind, now listen, there are two things. Secondly, we don't think we're going to die. I dare say, I don't ask you to raise your hands, but I'll dare say that most of you have never seen anybody die. And we're not around it. Now, in the ministry, die around us. People, we have medicine. People don't die of a broken arm today because gangrene sets in. People don't die of appendicitis. People don't die of an abscessed tooth. People don't live. Until the 30s and 40s, before the 30s and 40s even, people buried most of their children. You back to the revolutionary period in America, as recent as that, the Civil War. You ever walk to an old cemetery? Quite interesting. You'll see parents buried together. You see maybe six or seven children buried. And look at the day, look how old they were. 3 days old, 2 months old, 4 months old. So a family might, they might have couples, very common couples to have, very common couples to have, in most of the history of the world, couples have 10, 15 children. Why? They raise two. Why? They're lucky. So people die a lot. And if you had a theology where you were constantly threatened with hellfire, and you knew that your chances of living, being alive next week, were not all that good, it would make a difference in how you think. This had an effect on me. I was like you, I was raised, I never saw anybody die. I saw people who were dead. I never saw anybody die. I was pretty close to suffering, terrible suffering. We're not around Satan's terrible suffering much. Their bearers concentrate, but we were like a funnel. The sickness, the accidents and the terrible sicknesses of all kinds came in. I remember one time a young woman, she was about 29, 30, Catholic young woman, was an attorney, and she died of epilepsy, an epileptic seizure. Several weeks to get over that, to get adjusted to it mentally, to be around death and suffering. Understand what I'm saying? Because I just wasn't ever been around it. And I even had the experience working in hospitals or, stuff like that. It's depressing. Well, you see, because we're just not used to it. What I'm saying is that Luther was a product of his age, but it was more intense with Luther. Those two things, fear of hell and in their theology, and their ever presence of death. And Luther wanted assurance. The death of a close friend sobered him, caused him to dwell on his own death. Luther constantly faced his mortality, his own mortality. He was caught in a storm
Lightning struck a tree right next to him, knocked him off his horse. He made a vow to St. Anne. Who's St. Anne?
Who's Anne? St. Anne.
It's Mary's mother. He made a vow to St. Anne that if he survived, he would enter a monastery. Now that was common. Called foxhole religion. And there was a superstitious age, and he thought he was done for. He said, if you get me through this, don't let me die. I'll enter a monastery. Now keep in mind, here's what was going on in Luther's mind. In Roman Catholicism, there have always been, and still are today, three paths to God. There is the second way is the matter of self-help. Sacraments is the key to this. Understand? Sacraments get you saved, but you got to pay a lot of penalty. That's that is, if you enter a monastery or take the vows of a priest, become a nun, then you have more assurance. Understand? You spend less time in purgatory. In fact, it was common for the non-clergy in the Middle Ages, and Erasmus makes fun of this in The Praise of Folly, makes fun of those who would, it's very common for noble people, especially who could afford it, to be buried in a monk's cowl. A monk's cowl with a hooded monk's garment, to be buried in one. You know, they weren't a monk. Why? Well, they might look at the other side, they might think it was a monk. Nothing to lose by it. The third, by the way, is mysticism. Those who had direct experience with God, and most of the saints were mystics. Joan of Arc, others, the mystics. Mysticism. Religion in Roman Catholicism has always been mysticism. This is why the charismatic movement today is the Roman Catholic movement primarily. Because charismatic theology is mysticism. Roman Catholic doesn't change anything. You understand that? Charismatic Pentecostal theology is mysticism par excellence. And that's why those who got on the charismatic bandwagon are the most Roman Catholics. Well, anyway, Luther was moving up from here to here. You understand that? When he thought he was going to die in the storm, so he said, I'll become a monk. Very common thing to do. I remember the session of doctorate. That
once you took your vow, Augustine the monastery, you were in the monastery the rest of your life. But he could have a special dispensation, leave the monastery, and go study to teach. Now, interesting thing happened was, he sent him out and never got him back. But it does show